Let me see. So Ken, thank you for joining us here at the Digital Wellbeing Festival. You've been a part of the show before, and I'm really, really thrilled to welcome you back and also fascinated to talk about this whole intersection between space and digital wellbeing because it's such a crucial topic right now. So Ken, welcome to the event.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. Always a pleasure to share your thoughts.
So Ken, I gave a little bit of an introduction to you before, but and of course you've been on the show in the past, but I wonder if you would talk to us more, not so much about the work that you have done, but in particular, what are you working on at the moment, especially in this space of buildings, automation, and then also how that interlinks with digital wellbeing?
Okay, well, I guess you can't really start any discussion without talking about COVID and what it's done to the world. So I guess we have to start there. What it's done for us is I'm using it as an analogy of a reboot. It sent us all home because we were going to potential of getting this virus in the easiest way. They knew us not to get that virus was to go home and not be close to each other. So in a lot of ways, it was just if we consider that the world was an operating system, we were basically shut down and disconnected from that operating system and we went home. But the good news was we had the internet and we could still all communicate even though we were at home. And so that was an interesting an interesting analogy, and now we're trying to restart back up and figure how do we get back. And I love this. Some people call it the normal, back to normal. And my take on that is we're not ever going back to normal. What's in our future is not normal. Is going to be a complete reconfiguration. And not only are we going to reboot, people have challenged me on that word because in the sense of a reboot with computers is it pretty much always comes back up the same way. But this is more like a reboot in the literary term where we go back to our roots and analyze what we need to do. So yeah, we're kind of seeing that we got an opportunity to change how we've been doing things. The other thing that just happened to us is we had this immense social personal experience where we all went online around the world within a couple of month period. And ironically enough, we were forced into that within days, and everybody responded well. And a lot of us are coming out of it questioning if that is not a better way of doing things than what we were doing. So that's been kind of a radical change. So, as a guy who supposedly talks about technology, I stopped talking about technology and talking about life.
So, we've spoken about this in the past, and I think your take, especially on how the industry is responding to this post-COVID future. But I'm wondering now, what role do smart or digitized buildings play in contributing to human well-being?
Great question. Before the virus, we were starting to put a lot more emphasis on that. We in our industry, we have something that's called the 3-3. I'm sorry, the 3-30-300 rule, and the three is basically the cost of energy. The 30 is the cost of taxes and lease payments, and the 300 was the personal. And then later on, that got upgraded to another 3,000, which was the valued employees, such as if Zuckerberg is one of your clients, he might be more valuable than the guy who sweeps the floor. But the point is we were starting to look at that our automation had to respond to make the people happy beyond the basic things of temperature. So we were looking at that already. And so before the virus, we were looking at obviously temperature, humidity, indoor air quality, light levels. That was the purpose of the building automation system, to make sure those conditions were maintained. In the in-between, we started to move to that location services. We started to take the people as a measured variable within the building. And we started to see that that was important, and the corporates were supporting on that, us on that. So now the next flip, when the virus hit, is we all got sent home, and then we worked remotely, and that worked out pretty well. And then we talk about how we're going to get back. And the back isn't quite as easy as we thought it might be, because there's a whole bunch of things. Some of the people may never feel comfortable going back to the offices. Some of the offices are stranded assets inside of large mega cities where transportation. So we keep touching all kinds of things that we don't normally touch as building automation. So we're looking at that. How do we get the people back into the buildings? And now what is required from a building automation system is it's required to ensure that the building is safe, and that the people in, I know who the people in the building are. I have a medical record of them. I have to wear a mask. I have to maintain social and physical distance. And these are complex things. And another portion of that is a thing called risk management. Is once I say that my building is safe, should someone come into my building and catch the virus, then I may be liable. So there's a lot of complex equations coming. It's coming at a time that potentially the folks are looking at downsizing their square footage rather than up increasing it. So should I be spending all that money on these systems? And then even a bigger question pops up every once in a while is this the building's problem, or is this the tenant's problem? And should the tenant basically provide his own security services, health identification, location services, trowel over? And we're pretty close to that in the automation industry, whereas we move to more wireless type devices, that's kind of an interesting concept, that in fact the client might come with his automation system. We've always seen the automation system as an integral part of the building, but we might see it coming in the form of a corporate platform with all their cell phones connected, and whether they're using some kind of a wristband that says that they're virus-free, or whether they've actually identified and have provided medical records. Mm-hmm. So it becomes maybe not so much of a building function, but more of a corporate function. Anyway, so lots of questions, not many answers, but lots of questions moving forward. Did I skirt that question?
No. That was great. I do know, Ken, that one of the things that we were speaking about in the pre-interview was certainly before the virus hit, there were lots of systems in buildings that were used either to track people, or that were being implemented to maintain and to elevate people's well-being. And now in a post-pandemic world, the thing that we were speaking about in the pre-interview was the whole idea that buildings could take people's temperature to understand whether they're healthy enough to be in the building. And, you know, they could be, buildings basically could be used to gather all sorts of health diagnostic information about people just to understand whether they're fit for work or not. And that's a role that buildings can play. Do you see then that people would want to be in these, as you said, these stranded assets, particularly when they become much more, they kind of play much more of a data gathering role?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the biggest things that has happened with working remote is a lot of people got away from a very annoying commute that basically took a lot of their lives. And they've also lived closer to their families in the last couple of months than they ever have in their lives. So that's, and there's a positive and a negative side of that, but I think it's mostly positive. And so they've kind of reconnected, and this probably goes back, more back into your area of mindfulness and well-being. So that portion has come. And I think there's a rethink as to whether, I think the corporations and employers have to be careful in forcing people to go back, because they may in fact lose some key employees who have actually realized that their value is not necessarily tied to that location. Their value is their value, and they basically, you know, now that they're online, they're a little more free spirit, I guess. Anyway, so yeah, we got that going on. there's a lot of questions, a lot of answers in what you just asked. But the other one I keep going back is it the building's position to gather all this information? As soon as you start giving me information, typically in the buildings, we used to have like some kind of access, a card access or a fob access or something that allowed you to go into the building and go to your particular floor in the elevator. And it controlled quite a few things. That was basically a device controlled to an ID identity, and it didn't have to be connected to a person. As soon as we start gathering health information, now this is personal data. And ironically enough, we've had to do it in the cybersecurity space, where if you want to truly make your building cybersecurity safe, you have to understand everyone who has access to your networks. And so therefore, we had to start identifying people that were attached to the networks. And in fact, one of the companies is actually building a program based on that system, based on the cybersecurity. So it sits on top of the cybersecurity, and you add to it the health information. And they've actually offered that as a free service on top of their system. So you can kind of see where some of that's going. But the problem is, do you want, we always call him Boiler Bob, the guy who runs the building and keeps the heat on and keeps the air conditioning running and stuff like that. Do you really want Boiler Bob to have all of this access to all of this information? So maybe some of that information goes more into the client's platform and the client's information. Somehow you don't have a problem giving everything you have to your employer, because he needs to know that. He needs to know about your health and all those things. So maybe it's this whole problem of identities. And of course, there's this other concept that's being floated called disposable identities. I'm not sure if you've heard much about that. No. The idea is that you can actually, you assume an identity, and then there's like an in-between that basically you can't get back to you. We know we have all this information, but we don't know who the information belongs to. We use the information as we need to use the information, but we don't know physically who it belongs to. Supposedly, obviously, there's one link somewhere. But so we have to start pushing some of that around. Some of the problems are more moralistic and more mindfulness than they are technology. We have the technology that we can do that. Of course, what's been happening in China, they've been been using like facial recognition and basically tracking people, and we thought that was a bad thing until the virus came, and they were actually able to put geo boxes around people and finding out they had the virus, so basically, and they touched those people, so they could actually contact those people and get them tested and stuff. So it became an advantage. What we saw is a freedom of movement, freedom of loss of personal identity, and you know, turned out to be part, and you know, potentially something that was useful. Anyway, absolutely. I'm rambling.
Absolutely. So one thing I know that we spoke about at length. Again, we have spoken about at length and is incredibly important, is the potential rise of the suburbs now in this post-pandemic world. And I wonder if you can speak to that a little bit more, and whether you know, one thing that you have been saying a lot is that we're not going to go back to normal, and that having these huge buildings in the city and these being the primary places where we go to work, it's more than likely over. So yeah, talk to us about the rise of the suburbs, if you would.
Yeah, the word suburb always has sort of a negative connotation, I guess, just from, because I guess it was always, you were either in the center of the city or in the suburbs, and it was always said that way. I think what it is I'd prefer to rephrase it as the rise of the touchable community, the community in which you live, that you walk and bike and do short drives, probably the community within 10 miles around you or something like that. And if we want to call it a suburb, then that's fine. But it could be any form. It could be a small town. It could be an area of a mega city. But I think we're going to see more and more for North America to follow the European approach, like the Swiss approach, where you actually have a company town and the folks all in that town basically tend to work there, or maybe there's a couple of options of other companies they can work at, but typically they can walk, bike to their offices, and everything just gets a little bit closer. So the idea of traveling an hour this way and an hour back kind of gets pushed away. I think this has taught people that how bad that is. And of course, for the environment, of course, we just had in incredible gains once we got all these cars off the freeway. People in LA can actually see the sky. I live here on the west coast of Canada. The Olympic Peninsula, which is a mountain range, looking out at right now, it looks like it's 50 miles closer, kind of thing. I saw a mountain back of Seattle, which is over probably about 120 kilometers away, and I can actually see that mountain, which I could never see before because of the pollution. I can see the mountains behind Vancouver. So the clarity, the whole improvement of the environment by stopping the mindless commute, it's been just huge in North America. So anyway, yes, there's a lot of compelling movement. Apparently, some of the stuff's coming out now that some of the innovators and intellectual folks were already starting to make the move from the major city. I think what happened is the rise of the city is the best of the best went to the mega city, and they basically got in their high office, their high towers, and they created amazing things because they had good ideas. But now the people with good ideas can be anywhere, and they can just join themselves together, like you and I are. You're in the UK and I'm in Canada, and we're having this conversation. So the technology has possibly is raising a question as to the value of that collection. The other problem, of course, is that the cost of the mega cities is getting crazy, both from a real estate you know, per foot point of view, and for the price that people, what people have to pay to live in that, in a fairly small apartment where they could actually be living in a more comfortable house. So it's been interesting to see how that all plays out. But yes, I do believe there's a move to the back to the country. I don't think we're going back to the farm quite, but back to smaller centers.
It is interesting though, as you mentioned, if we are moving back to the if we are moving back to the suburbs, if there's a move away from the big cities, one of the things that then happens if we do all become remote, or you know, as you were mentioning, that there's an evolution of an in-between space, right? It's not the office, it's not the home, it's not the pub or the bar or the cafe. There's more than likely going to be something in between. Then the way that these spaces get digitized that thinking has to evolve as well, because it can't just be what we've been used to in the big cities.
Yeah, that's a real interesting one. There's a great desire for everybody who's been Zooming for the last 2 months to actually reach out and touch people and hug them, and you know, we are social beings and we do want to get together. So I think the in-between would provide that space. It would provide a known quantity. You'd go into the in-between would probably be the corporate in-between, or there'd be some kind of an association, a technology connection, or some reason that you all know each other and you've known each other for a long time. So that umbrella of trust, which I think keeps coming up a lot, thing too, is do we trust going into this space? So that would help. So I think that would help evolve the in-between space. Now, I think the other thing that's interesting here is we're starting to see technologies, because we're so connected, that we can actually start having technologies that the corporate has a connection. We have a connection to the corporate that will stand up in our home, in the in-between, and in the head office. And I think that's probably the goal we're trying to achieve, is that whole connected, that we're no matter where we are. And then of course the other one that somebody's pointed out is I don't want to be in any of those places. I want to be sitting on the beach, and there's no reason why you can't sit on the beach and be very productive. So I think we're going to see, and we're already seeing that before the virus, we were starting to see a explosion in building platforms and corporate platforms, and the platforms basically would reach out and they would touch everywhere they needed to touch. If you had to be able to control your window, we would basically add that to your platform. And if you need to control the temperature, as being in the building automation industry, obviously if you want to control your window shade, we have to put in a device to do that. So we're happy we get to do Our business is going to grow, I think, no matter what. I'm very optimistic that the automation business is going to grow, because more and more people want to touch everything remotely. But the method at which they do that, if we start using technology, I think that's what you're going to see, is they'll be able to float anywhere you are. You're basically, in fact, if the boss wants to know where you are, he can say, oh, he's in the in-between space in such and such. No, he's on the beach today, you know, and why shouldn't they have that information? And why we used to kind of hide that information. And I think what we've done is we've proven that we can be as productive anywhere we are. In fact, maybe even more productive. I lost your sound. Oh, you're
sorry.
Yeah, you're. Actually, we're saying that that's the new thing is you basically muted yourself.
Oh gosh.
Sorry, so can you ask the question again?
No, it's all good. What was I going to say? So Ken, I think this is perhaps the most important question of all, because I think that you'd have a lot of insight on this, but you know, given your, you know, all of the work that you've done in automation and buildings and digitization, now people are starting to work remotely. And again, this is not just work, but kids are studying remotely. And so we're all doing this online. What would you say, what things would you say people can take from, I guess, automation or digitization that contributes to well-being that they can then, you know, integrate into their home offices or, you know, to where they are working remotely?
Well, yeah, one interesting thing I've seen is the education is, excuse me, that's been changing fast. It was changing rapidly, but it's now just going ahead leaps and bounds. There's a whole bunch of things happening. Is again, we had a whole group of folks that have been into the education system forever, and they were reluctant to use online training, and this forced them to use it. So they had to go back and ask the younger people how to do it. And they had an infinite supply of them, because anybody that had started in the last few years knew how to use the technology and already were communicating with their classes by having their own website and using Instagram and whatever. So that whole change happened. The other thing is, why should any lecture be different? You know, why should it be not just a PowerPoint presentation that somebody's put a lot of effort into and has a lot of good information? And should it be done over and over again by 15 teachers if somebody did it well, or should they be focused on kind of putting together one good presentation of it? So we start to see, you know, efficiencies there. And I think it's happening in every way. But then watching like my granddaughter just work through all of this, she's learning real life skills. I mean, she didn't know how to use Zoom. She didn't know how to use, we forced her to come backwards. I thought that was cute, because they basically do everything with phones. And, but the school system had basically was using computers. So they had to go back to computers. So she had to learn how to use a computer. It didn't take her long, because it's sort of like an annoying phone, if you look at it that way. So now she knows how to do that. She knows how to generate pictures. She knows how to do this talk at a grade 8 level, which, I'm not sure that the teachers would have allowed that to happen. They have their structured thing that you have to learn this and this. So in real life skills, it's been great. So it's forced us to move ahead, and in a lot of areas, it's done exactly the same thing. It's like leapfrog over. I keep talking about, I'm supposed to be talking about building automation, but everything comes back to sort of the change, because once it all settles down, then we can start talking about building automation again. But everything is a variable. So it's so difficult to try and say, well, this is the way it's going to be, because I don't know whether the building's going to be there. I don't know whether the building's going to be used as office, or is it going to be repurposed for manufacturing, or is it going to turn into a vertical farm? Anything is an option. And how will we congregate in the future? Will we congregate in hotel rooms, in floors of buildings, or will we have seminars that basically block out a sterile cruise ship and identify everybody safe, and we take them off and they go on a cruise, as well as doing the sessions that they need to do? Everything is a potential variable, because the models of everything is getting changed, so it's going to get repurposed. So I'm babbling again. Take over.
That's no problem. Well, Ken, look, it was absolutely fantastic to have you as part of this event. It was incredibly insightful. And like you say, you know, nobody knows where this is going to go, and I'm really excited to see where it does. But Ken, thanks so much for spending some time with us here today.
Okay, welcome. Always good fun.
Cool.
Okay. Okay, well, this, what I'm seeing, Lawrence, is the building automation is starting to appear in several layers, I guess. And one of the one is the corporate platform. And the corporate platform is going to include calls that reach out to the physical building to turn the temperature up, turn the temperature down, open blinds, close blinds, allow you access to the building, allow you access to particular areas, allow you to book a boardroom, all of these kinds of functions. So it becomes what's on the menu in the restaurant, maybe even controls your immersive experience. We didn't even talk about that, the whole digital wall kind of concept that's evolving in buildings. So again, trying to put the client completely in control. That side of that is something I think needs to be evolved and generated by the client and what are the pieces of his platform. And obviously that's something that digital mindfulness has to have a play in, and to basically see how all of these things interact, and is that annoying or is that comforting? Those kind of decisions would be really good. For us as the automation industry, it's all good news, because anytime you want to have a greater interface with the building, it involves us putting in physical devices to actually make the physical things change. And then you, depending on what kind of capabilities you want to do, the location services is again another thing that I think the corporate wants. They want to know where the people are, how the rooms are being used, because that lets them basically lease the correct amount of space. And this will become more and more important. You can imagine that was a complex question when workforces were static. But now that workforces are not static, it even becomes more complex. Can you imagine the mobility in one of these buildings of having, you know, 30% of your people show up this day, and, you know, and just even the fact that, oh, we better watch out that the 30% don't show up on the same day, or we're not going to have enough desks, and, you know, a whole bunch of logics like that. So the whole management side of it, the whole software management side of it, is a building automation function, but it is kind of a separate layer than the physical building automation, if that makes any sense.
One of the things also I remember that we spoke about again in the pre-interview was the role for different types of technologies in these buildings, in these digitized spaces, that are going to have a strong role for they're going to have a strong role in digital well-being. So, for example, you spoke about the importance of voice, for example, just how important that would be.
Yeah, actually, that's a great one. We missed that in the first go-through, as the whole idea of a touchless world, because the virus can be transformed by us physically touching. And so, therefore, voice becomes... I think voice was kind of a tough sell. People didn't really want to use voice, but now they have a reason. Is I don't want to touch that elevator button, so I say, fourth floor, please, and it takes me to the fourth floor. And I'm okay with that, whereas pre-COVID, I was not okay with that. And there's a lot of work going in the development of chatbots basically... we'll talk to you and ask you the questions that some other things. It might even collect information as you're riding up the elevator. It says, how are you feeling today? How do you view our new policy? So we start this little conversation talking to the elevator as we're going up. So that becomes a building automation. Again, you can see what's happening. Is that a building function, or is that a corporate function? And I think you can provide what the right answer is on that. The answer is it's both, but basically the spinning of it, the digital mindfulness piece of it is something that you and the corporation have to work out We as an automation industry need to respond to your requests and make happen what it is you want to happen. Basically, another thing we haven't talked, we got a lot of things we haven't talked about. The one thing we haven't talked about is how does all of this stuff come together? And we started in the early days, we had something called a master systems integrator, and his job was to pull together diverse automation systems within the building, such as elevator, lights, temperature, those kinds of things, physical things that were fairly obvious. It started out quite simply. But then what happened is it got more complex as we started to move into corporate platforms, and things like the people actually becoming part of the control and people having a greater input to what was happening. So we started to see the development of the professional master systems integrator, kind of the next level. And he might actually employ several master systems integrators to pull together all of this automation stuff into a plan. And I think it's kind of evolved that we almost need an architectural digital designer for the building that basically starts pulling together, because he may have the mechanical, physical devices as well as the human touchy-feely devices, and all of these things have to come together. The digital statement, if we talk about it in architectural terms, for the building is it needs to have a common touch and feel and a purpose, I think. And now we have this extra complexity that may get trolled over corporate office, the in-between, and home.
Agreed.